Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Alan, Brazil. Ex-Scottish striker and breakfast show broadcasting behemoth. Played for Ipswich, Spurs, Man United and Chelsea City. Huge. Won 2 UEFA Cups and FA Cups. Played for Scotland at the 82 World Cup. TalkSport talisman for over 20 years. The only footballer we've ever covered who has their own brand of nuts. Plus, author. But what will the book club and special guest, podcasting hero Ben Partridge, think of Alan's book, There's an Awful Lot of Bubbly in Brazil? Find out in today's Football Book Club.
He's got the life of a kind of sheik, but he's just on TalkSport.
It's like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but set in and around Ipswich.
Why have I wasted 200 pages hearing a story supposedly in which Mike Porky Parry got drunk and asked a 20-year-old Latvian woman to marry him?
It's Brazil and Porky telling those cutthroat terrorists, you don't frighten us, Osama!
While all this was going on, one Palace fan picks up my £250 felt-tip pen, and I haven't seen it since.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Jules Verne, more Timo Werner. Once again, I'm going to chuck someone under the bus for that. Thank you very much, Texie Smith, for sending that. Texie, that's not a name you hear much.
That is a good name.
Yeah, Texie.
Should have involved Texie in the thing itself. Less Texie Smith, more Jim Smith. It's harder than it sounds.
it's very difficult. I'm James Mugg, and over the weeks we'll be reading such classics as Graham Lasso's Left Field and Francis Benali, The Autobiography. But today, we're stepping into the Alan Brazil multiverse, reading his first book, the 2006 classic, There's an Awful Lot of Bubbly in Brazil, - The Life and Times of a Bon Viveur. It's the title that keeps on going, and joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
And please welcome to the show a brilliant comedian and writer, as well as podcasting royalty. It's Mr. Beef and Dairy Network himself and one of the three bean salad beans, Ben Partridge.
Hiya.
How are you?
Woo! I'm very well. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'm maybe pulling back the wizard's curtain a bit to say that when I was asked to be on the show, You gave me a short list of possible books we could go for.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's giving away the...
No, please do. Yeah.
And Alan Brazil was on there, and I just couldn't look past Alan Brazil.
Yeah.
There's something about it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the others also seemed like they might be quite good fun, but there was something about the name... I mean, before we go any further...
Okay.
What I want to say is, What often gets lost with Alan Brazil, because he's become a kind of figure of fun in some ways.
There's a lot
to consider when you think about Alan Brazil. And I think that what gets lost in the conversation is the fact that his name is Alan Brazil.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very easy to overlook.
It really is. And he's got a Monty Python name in real life.
Yep. And he kind of looks a bit Monty Python-y as well, a little bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think because there are so many facets to Alan Brazil that the fact that he's called Alan Brazil just is one of many. And I think... people look past it, but we are fundamentally talking here about a Scottish man called Alan Brazil.
Yes. Yeah.
Not to cross the streams too much, it's quite a beef and dairy name, it feels like, Alan Brazil.
Well, it's like, it's the absurdist comedy name, isn't it?
It's just a nonsense name, really.
Of all the things I thought we were going to pick up Alan Brazil for today, I did not think his name was going
to
be one.
I think it's a good place to start, because it is the first thing you know about the man. He's called Alan Brazil.
That is true.
Well, talking about the start, actually, Ben, this is pulling that curtain way further back. I'm fairly sure I asked you 4 years ago to be our first ever guest in the first episode of Football Book Club. But then we kind of... I was going to say we changed our minds. That's not true. We couldn't do it for some reason. And then you and I, Jack, we were kind of like, okay, well, because I think we were toying with the idea of always having guests at that point. And then we said, we'll just read all the books. We can't put people through that. And now, 4 years later, here you are.
And actually, forced you to read the books.
Yeah.
And actually, I think you did ask me to do this quite a long time ago. And then for lots of reasons, I couldn't do it. And so the book, There's an Awful Lot of Bubbly in Brazil, has been sitting next to my bed now for about 6 months. So every time I've fallen asleep or woken up in the last 6 months, the first thing I've seen are the words, There's an Awful Lot of Bubbly in Brazil.
Beautiful.
And it's kind of been hanging over me, really.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. We like to do that.
And I think a lot of your guests, I will reveal, and this must be the case with most of your guests, I finished reading it 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, okay. I was cramming it
like it was my English GCSE was coming tomorrow. It became very joyless. It became very functional. I just have to read these words.
Have you read many footballers' books before?
I'm trying to think whether I have. I've read a few rugby autobiographies. Mm-hmm. Gavin Henson's one's very good.
Okay.
Like actually good or this level good?
No, like kind of very much in the milieu of your podcast.
That kind of good.
Sometimes you don't want them to be good. Yeah.
But no, not really. I'm trying to think. Mainly rugby books, really.
Okay, interesting.
Which is kind of revealing a little bit about my sporting preferences. But Alan Brazil is more than just a footballer.
He is. He's a broadcasting icon.
I think there's a lot. It's interesting you say that it was by your bed for 6 months, because these books, I have a shelf now of just some of the worst books to have been written, and they do just hang over me while I write, and I'm like, well, that's this is the choice you've made, Jack. There's nothing you can do about it. But also, I think for a man whose name is Alan Brazil, the title being There's a Lot of Bubbly in Brazil, I don't think makes any sense.
As a
pun name for it just doesn't work, doesn't it? Yeah, am I losing? Is the joke that there's a lot of champagne in Brazil?
Yeah, I guess
like the country Brazil.
Maybe you don't think of Brazil as being a country which is known for champagne, but in fact, there's an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil, and then it works on the other level of him constantly drinking champagne. to the point where it can't be enjoyable at all.
This might be premature, but can I skip to the last sentence of the book?
Yeah, that'd be the quickest episode we've ever done, so please do.
I'm happy to revisit, but I think it's a good place to end, because similarly, I don't think the name really works. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of pun on the fact he likes champagne, but it's not as if the phrase, there's a lot of bubbly in Brazil, exists as a phrase.
No,
that's what I mean.
So anyway, at the end of the book, because also all the way through, I was waiting for the phrase, there's a lot of bubbly in Brazil to come out. Like someone might, I was thinking somebody might say it to him as a joke or something. And then that would make sense of it. But it doesn't come until the last paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how not only has he been a really good footballer, he's also a really good broadcaster. And he writes, and realizing that, I'm now even more grateful for the life I've had. Most people don't reach particularly great heights in their first and usually only career. I've been lucky enough to make my mark in both footballing and broadcasting. There has indeed been an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil.
He said the title.
If we hadn't given you that extra half hour to read the book, you would never have known that that was there.
That's true.
You would have been totally lost by this book.
But that indeed been an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil doesn't relate to what he's just said.
No, that doesn't at all.
It's very much. I get the feeling that he wrote this book. He wrote the words, there has indeed been an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil. Like, pressed return.
Then wrote
the rest of the book and then was like, there we go. That'll be the last line. That's fine. Yeah. That works for me.
I've got to get it in there somewhere.
It felt like a little bit that you were expecting there to be a story where he's in Brazil And they're like, and he's like, hey, do you have any champagne? And they're like, oh, we don't serve champagne here, actually. Mm-hmm. He's like, that's surprising. I really thought there'd be at least some bubbly in Brazil. And then later on, he says, contrary to what that person said while I was in Brazil, there is actually an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil. I think that's the only way I could have possibly justified this title.
Right.
Simply
by the amount of digging into the title we've been doing, I'm kind of worried this episode is going to go on for about a month. So
we've got the final line down, so it's fine.
That's true. Yeah, we got the first and last line of the whole thing of the book as itself.
Ben didn't read this book. He's only read the title and the last line.
that's a smart thing to do. Let's get into it. Let's read. What's it called?
May I bring your attention to the quotes on the front of the book?
We're getting into the book. Let's read an awful lot of bubbly in Brazil. So, over the show, we're going to be getting to know Alan and Ben. There's a quiz and a dramatic reading. Also, Alan, you can't really call him Alan. He doesn't sound like an Alan by himself. You have to say Alan Brazil, I think, don't you? He's a real two-namer. but anyway, first, let's see what Amazon is saying about his book. It has 4.2 stars from 172 ratings, including this 5-star review from Mr. DWJ Horseman. review entitled, all caps, very enter space S space ining. Lord knows what was going on with this keyboard.
That review took a left turn at the last second. I really thought I knew where it was going.
Yep, no, it's going here. The book was great. Add me laughing. Good read. I would read another book on the same subject. Excellent. No punctuation in there whatsoever. I have good news for you, Mr.
On the
Horseman.
Same subject, the subject of Alan Brazil.
Yeah, well, and good news. There's two other books. There's two other books.
Like he's saying, could you direct me to the Alan Brazil section of your bookshop? Well, I enjoyed books.
Yeah,
books in the genre of Alan Brazil.
Yeah, I like sort of historical fiction. I like biographies of prime ministers and presidents, and also books specifically about Alan Brazil.
Do you want to know the names of his other two books?
I think I know. I mean, surely there's one involving nuts. Is it something to do with nuts as a pun?
Actually, no. I don't think
that's
so.
That's Matt.
I know you're okay. Don't worry. Book four, I'm sure, is imminent. No, they're called Both Barrels from Brazil - My War on the Numpties. You didn't choose that one. And his most recent autobiography, Only Here for a Visit. I think that's also got some subtitle, but I can't remember what it is.
He does say that in this book. Yeah,
he does.
That's his guiding philosophy.
I would say all of his books are probably pretty rehashed versions of the last. That's just an assumption.
Just a theory.
I could be wrong.
Yeah. That's just both barrels anyway, from Brazil doesn't work. That's another pun that doesn't work.
It's alliteration, at least, I guess. Right.
I guess bubbly is alliteration. But yeah,
the next one will just be called Book by Brazil.
Yeah, that's good.
There is indeed an awful lot of book by Brazil.
Right. What did you think about it anyway? We know what Mr. Horseman thinks of it. You guys enjoy it?
So my general feeling on it was that before I opened it, I thought it might be quite good.
Okay.
Like with a lot of these biographies, like the prospect of reading, I don't know who you've read. Steve McManaman's autobiography, like that's not a temp.
You named
not-
about the only footballer whose book we haven't read. That's quite impressive.
Dean Windass.
They're not tempting to me particularly.
Yep.
This one I thought, okay, because it feels like it's not necessarily just going to be a biography, it's also going to have a kind of Clarkson-y sort of humorist edge to it. And
exactly.
I thought, if he pulls that off, I don't mind that kind of thing. And I think he is trying to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading it, I was like, these stories that I'm getting should be fun.
Mm.
That, you know, they're kind of fun. If you just break them down to their facts, they are fun. And I guess we'll get into kind of some of the stories he tells, because they're kind of just like bullshit pub stories, basically, the whole book.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not fun at all. And I can't work out why. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's fun adjacent. I think that's the thing. It's sort of like, it's like, oh, it as you say, it could be fun. And also, like, there's just this, there's a level of malice throughout the whole thing as well, which is kind of an undertone the whole way that makes the whole thing unfun at the front.
It's like someone at university telling you about their night out last night, and like you're just totally uninterested in everything. Like, okay, yeah, fine, all right, you drank a bit, okay, cool, yeah, great.
But down to his best friend being called Porky. Porky.
I was going to say, I mean, this book really, if I had to sum it up in one sentence, I wouldn't use the one they've gone for, which is The Life and Times of Bon Viveur. I would go for the sentence, it's a love story between Alan Brazil and his co-presenter, Porky.
Mike's just Mike Porky Parry
prick.
I also got that impression from there. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because it's sort of, I think Alan is like, yeah, you know, Porky, he's a prick, but he's a lovable prick, isn't he? And you're sort of reading being like, no, he's just a prick. He can't really see the fact that he's like none of the redeeming factors that Alan seems to see in Porky are actually redeeming factors. They're just terrible.
The thing about Porky is he is a co-writer. Are you aware that he's a co-writer of this book?
Yes.
Which makes me very confused about the whole thing, personally.
Because I think you can feel Porky's hand on certain chapters.
Interesting.
The more bullshitty ones. And then
the ones later that inevitably end up with him like having sex with a beautiful woman. All women just flock around him in any chapter.
Constantly.
So you can tell when Mike Parry's had when Mike Porky Parry has had his hands on it. Because then later on, there's some other chapters which are a bit more about, you know, his time playing football for Ipswich, where I don't think Mike Parry's been involved in that bit. It's two books. It's Old Testament and New Testament, really.
I think this is a good moment to bring up something then, in which case, because that is definitely true. The book does have a very distinct first half to it and a second half to it, because you have these several chapters of pure, you know, fear and loathing light, which is kind of what the first 140 pages are. It's like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but set in and around Ipswich, basically, is how the first bit is. And then there's something which we should mention in there, which is very, very serious, and it's something which Alan has spoken about previously. It is well documented. He's talked about it a lot. But yeah, Alan does mention how when he was a young footballer, he was abused by a coach. It's only in a short chapter, and it's really, really well written. We won't dwell on it because it is only a small part of the book. But it does really feel like a real middle point. It comes out of nowhere, this harrowing, really well-written chapter, really honest chapter as well about it. And then from there on, even though there are some nonsense bits in there, it is a lot more honest. Things about, you know, how he dealt with his injuries and when he wasn't playing at United and Spurs and stuff like that. And it becomes a lot more, it becomes a lot better. It's almost like he doesn't have to pretend to be, the Alan Brazil of TalkSport and Cheltenham and boozing with Mike Parry fame.
He writes about it very well. And it's, I think he says as much. He sort of likes to talk about it so that it's made public, and these things are made public, and like he's doing it on purpose, right? Because he thinks that these things need to be out in the open, which is absolutely correct. As you say, for the first time, he writes honestly about his feelings and what he was doing and how that affected him. And you just think, why have I wasted 200 pages hearing a story about supposedly in which Mike Porky Parry has got drunk and asked a 20-year-old Latvian woman to marry him?
What? Yes! Why?
They go back to the same wine bar the next day, and her entire family are there celebrating this upcoming marriage, which he has no memory of sort of instigating.
There is absolutely no way that story happened, by the way.
Of course. No.
Yeah. Which leads to Alan Brazil essentially having a kind of James Bond style fist fight with a number of Latvian kind of thugs.
This
is what I mean by the Fear and Loathing style. It really is. Like, apart from, you know, take out the drugs of Fear and Loathing and replace it with, like, hospitality booze, effectively, all the way through it. Switch Benicio del Toro for Mike Parry. And there's even, like, a race at the beginning. Like, it starts off at Cheltenham, doesn't it? The whole thing, which is where he got sacked from TalkSport the first time because he got too drunk and didn't turn up the next day.
Yeah.
And Fear and Loathing, they're also cataloging some race. I can't what it is. I should remember. But yeah.
It's the thing that I noticed reading the stories was that in every story, he sort of comes out on top, which is a bit of an autobiography thing, right? So he always mm-hmm. manages to sort everything out, mm-hmm. which actually makes the stories all the more boring because they all finish with, and it was fine.
Yes. Like, yes.
Every story, it ends up, it was fine. And it's always because he is able to do something physically amazing. Mm-hmm. So like there's a story at the end about how his reactions are so quick that he was able to get under a table before anyone else, and then nobody noticed he was there.
That was weird. That story, yeah.
But he ascribes these kind of amazing physical capabilities to himself.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure exists.
I agree.
But then also midway through at the end, he's like, oh, I had to stop playing because my back was, you know, absolutely ruined. I could barely like brush my teeth without being in physical pain. And yet, like, he was fighting off these Latvian thugs who were threatening Porky. It's like, it just doesn't feel real. That's the problem with the whole thing. Nothing feels real in it.
Nothing is. And there are so many close calls like that throughout the book. Like, there's a bit where he almost dies skiing. There's a bit where he almost dies on a horse that runs away. Yeah. I genuinely thought he was going to turn up on like the Titan sub at some point or something like that and just about get away with it.
Sorry, here's a quote. I put my full palm into the Latvian's face and pushed him hard enough to propel him over a chair. It's all just stuff like that.
But also, like, it ends with him that, like, that whole section ends with him saying, like, they dive into a taxi, like, they pop open the champagne because there's always fucking champagne near Alan Brazil. He can't help but there's always someone thrusting a bottle into his hand. But he says, as they were drinking champagne at Claridge's at the end, and they were talking about this. He says, as we raised our glasses, I leant over to Porky and told him, next time you call off your engagement to a mad illegal immigrant who looks like she could have been a kickboxing champion and whose family closely resemble the gangs in New York, you're on your own. No fucking way did you say that, you stupid.
And
you probably said something along the lines of, oh, champagne, please, more, please. Fucking hell, Porky. Fucking hell. Be really done this time, Porky.
That was a good impression. That was a good impression of him. The whole book is very much Didn't Happen of the Year award kind of of style. Everything is
he tells the exact same story again, but this time it's not Latvian thugs. It's some people who are like, it's like Simon Jordan's brother.
Oh, yeah, oh, yes! an award ceremony at Crystal Palace or something. Right?
They go to an award ceremony at Crystal Palace and they tell it, Porky sings a satirical song about the chairman.
Yeah.
And then as a result, the heavies take them to a boardroom where they're going to get duffed up. And then similarly, again, like he James Bonds his way out of it and they just sort of walk away and it's fine.
Or the heavies are like, yeah, sorry, you're right. You're much cooler than that guy. I wish we didn't have to work for this guy, but we do. He's such a dick.
There are so many moments of things like that, Jack, where the people around them have clearly not said that. It's a bit like Ginola's book that we did, where Ginola was like, "Somebody came up to him was like, yeah, you are great, David, actually. You've told it. You've proved to us now that it's you who is better than us." But there's another bit where they're on a plane with some like real stiff guy who doesn't like them, just boozing and being horrible next to him, ruining his flight to America, whatever it is. And then
is this like, the flight where they claim they drank the plane dry before it had taken off?
Yeah,
yes,
because
it was to Nice, so it was only like an hour and a half.
Oh, that was
and they were like, we got a drink, and the trolley's not going to get down to us before the end of it. You're like, just chill out, man. You're okay. You don't need to drink constantly.
Exactly. And then the guy next to
Jackie does need to drink constantly.
That's true. Oh, yeah. You don't have to forget that, Jack.
That's the heavy subtext of this whole book, isn't it?
Yeah.
that's a good point. I apologize.
This guy, they take, I think at some point the plane's landing and Porky's holding a glass of wine, and then the plane veers to the left suddenly, which I don't think usually happens in a plane. And the wine goes all over the evangelist's face, as he calls, and his mouth was opening and closing like a fish, but nothing was coming out. Everybody burst out laughing. There's so many moments where it was like, and then after I said that, everyone was clapping and laughing and cheering us on and saying, well done, Alan. That was great.
Everyone was happy that the man had been covered in wine. The man who was clearly upset had been covered. Everyone loved it.
Everyone sided with us, the people who made everyone upset and scared during the flight.
Talking of Porky, sorry, I was going to. All you guys, I'm assuming, have seen the video of Mike Parry doing the cinnamon challenge.
Yes. So yes.
Oh my
book,
God.
That was all I knew about Mike Parry, really, right, before I read this book.
Yes. I had to remind myself that it was that I hadn't imagined it today. I watched it three or four times in a row. It's just the grunting and the noises. And the fact that he keeps saying throughout, like, it's not going to cause me pain. I've been through a lot of pain in my life and I can handle this pain. It's just bizarre.
I don't understand.
Sorry, Jack, sorry.
I don't understand how Mike Parry has come to exist. That's all I was going to say.
Well, he in my head occupies a kind of what I would call the Nick Ferrari zone. Mm-hmm. There's like, yes, a few of these guys that are kind of the same. John Gaunt being another one. Mm. Okay. Nick Ferrari, Mike, someone else? The one who
concrete guy, yeah. Mike Graham?
The gun,
and I'd say on the more rational side of that is like Ian Dale, but then occasionally Ian Dale. If you told me Ian Dale had done the cinnamon challenge, I'd be like, yeah, I believe that. Sure.
See, I put him more in with like the kind of like commentators you see on those like talking head shows, like a Paul Ross kind of character.
Yes.
Or something like that. Yeah. That's more the kind of world I think of Mike Parry as.
Did they ever talk about here how Mike and him came to be? Or came to like work together.
I think they worked. I think he was doing talk radio, wasn't he? But was it called talk radio before?
He was his boss at Talk Sport. He says,
right, okay, and then what? Mike then sort of like muscled in on the and then became a co-host.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think so. God,
like,
oh,
kind of, no, Carl Pilkington style.
Yeah,
yeah.
This guy's so hilarious. We've got to get him on.
We've seen the way he eats cinnamon.
He keeps trying to marry Latvians.
In a similar vein to the how I only knew about Porky through the Cinnamon Challenge video, which if you haven't watched it, go and find it.
Definitely.
Is my first exposure to Alan Brazil was the video that's on YouTube, which is just what's the audio version of footage?
A recording?
Yeah, the recording.
Yeah, I guess.
He's on The Breakfast Show. Have you heard this? And he's talking to a correspondent who the previous night has been to a memorial sort of gig for Bob Monkhouse. Are you aware of this?
No, I don't know this.
Oh, this is fantastic. Okay.
Oh, I do know this. I do know this. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes. And I think the guy he's talking to is Trevor. I can't remember his second name, but he used to write for The Sun. Mm-hmm. And he'd been to this thing for Bob Monkhouse. And he's like, yeah, it was brilliant. Obviously, you know, they showed videos of Bob doing some of his best stuff and everyone's laughing. And they had these wonderful old comedians who used to work with him and they came out and were really funny. And then those new comedians were there as well. And they were saying about how much they respect Bob Monkhouse. And it was amazing just to watch how many people respected Bob Monkhouse. And then after a bit of a gap, Alan Brazil just goes, how's he doing these days?
That level of attention to detail.
He died. and then he tries to save it. Alan Brazil just starts making little noises, like weird little noises, and then just goes, yeah, you know, I'd heard something different, but yeah, okay.
Maybe
you think he's dead. I'd heard otherwise, but you know, we'll agree to disagree.
That's almost like veering into conspiracy theory territory. Bob Monkhouse on Nylon with Tupac.
Can I read out another bit of showing off from Alan Brazil that I really loved?
Please.
So this is when they go to there's a Crystal Palace charity event or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a they're at the meal, and it's before they've been taken into the chairman's office to be duffed up. Porky and I clearly had popular support amongst the Palace fans. Throughout the course of the meal, they queued at our table, the top table, asking us to sign their menus, and we posed for dozens of pictures and spoke to relatives on mobile phones. While all this was going on, one Palace fan picks up my £250 felt-tip pen, and I haven't seen it since.
That is terrific. If someone hasn't got that for their out of context Alan Brazil, I'll be amazed.
Yeah, that's the
prime out of context fodder.
I mean, someone's doing very well for themselves, aren't
they? Yeah. Wow. So a £400 crayon.
Yeah, you can't buy a felt tip pen that's worth £250.
No, I agree. Where are you getting that? you could buy every felt tip pen in the world for less than £200.
Does he mean like a magic, like a permanent marker? Sorry, let's not. You're right.
It's a fountain pen or something, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
Or just like a really fancy permanent marker.
This isn't so much him showing off, but I must applaud Alan for his ability to get out of anything with, it's just an observation, no matter how offensive the thing he's just said.
Yes, it is. It's quite xenophobic at points, isn't it?
It's xenophobic, yeah. But also...
It's literally just an observation.
And just truly nasty occasionally. There's a bit where he goes to America, which I think Jack will talk about later. And he says, we went out to the track in a luxurious bus, and naturally there was plenty of champagne flowing, of course. Just every paragraph has that in there somewhere. Mm. It was being served by a collection of very lovely young ladies. The more times I go to America, the more often it strikes me that many women in England do not look after themselves as well as most girls in the States. Then he goes on to say, like, my wife Jill, she's always immaculate whenever we go out, as are my daughters. But that, to my eyes at least, is not always the case with much of the female population in this country. American girls just seem to have whiter teeth with broader smiles and better styled hair. Brackets. I hope I don't find myself suddenly under attack for saying that. It's just an observation. Just an observation.
Just an observation.
Just an observation.
Just something I've observed about 30 million people in the UK. Yeah. Just something I've observed.
Yeah. I mean, that also touches on something which I sort of found throughout the book, which is that Alan's really horny.
He's a horny man.
He's a horny man.
Yeah.
Like, there's one bit where in the same breath, he's talking about how he's at a ski resort and his wife, Jill, is there, who he obviously loves. And he says that Jill's looking great or something. And then he writes about half a page about just like looking at the 20-year-old women who are going down the slope.
Yes.
Grim.
There's a similar bit when he's... he's like talking about the greatest thing that could ever happen to me as a footballer is going to a World Cup. And he's loving everything about being there. He's it's brilliant. This is everything's fantastic. He's in Brazil somewhere. I can't remember if that's where the World Cup is.
It is Brazil, yeah. Or Spain. I think it's Brazil. He's playing against Brazil.
Oh, against Brazil in Spain. That's it. He's going like, finally my career reached this point. I'm going like, oh, I can't believe I'm actually here. It was great to look at all the beautiful Brazilian women wandering around, kind of like parading their bits. That was the real highlight, yeah. Then that's the World Cup game. Yeah.
Like beauty queens with copper-coloured skin, dark hair and flashing green eyes. And they were wearing what appeared to be the national costume of their country, skimpy bikini tops and wraparound skirts in blue, yellow and green.
It's so Carry On.
It's so it really Carry
is.
On.
It really is.
It's a weird thing because I think Alan is horribly horny throughout this book, but often he'll try and like put that on Mike. And I'm not saying that Mike deserves any kind of like benefit of the doubt for being a horrible horny guy. But there is a bit where he's like, Mike got really like he I can't remember who he was talking to. Someone from EastEnders, I think it was. He took someone from EastEnders who has like apparently massive breasts, and like Mike spends the whole interview going he just can't like quantify the idea that there is a woman here with massive breasts.
Yeah.
He goes full cinnamon challenge at her.
I might need to cut up the audio and play that after that noise that you just made.
Oh, God.
The question that arises for me out of this book, so as you've mentioned, every page he goes to a different wine bar and orders a bottle of champagne. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I've never ordered champagne in a wine bar or even in a pub. Mm-hmm. I've had champagne, obviously, at events. I've had bottles at home that I bought from the supermarket. I've never bought one in a pub because I always assume it's about £200 or something. Like, it's always going to be an insane amount of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And maybe I would do it, if I was celebrating. But I still would. No, actually, I wouldn't. I was trying. You could see me there trying to find some common ground with Alan Brazil. I can't find it. but I think that the question that arises for me is, how much money has Alan Brazil got? Because...
Mm.
He was a footballer before Megabucks times, right?
Yes.
So he wasn't earning, he was earning good money, but it wasn't insane money.
Nope.
But literally, just on champagne alone, if you totted up the amount of champagne in this book and then tried to average it out over a year or something, he must be getting through like 20 grand a year in champagne.
Yeah, I
think more. It might be more than that. More. I think it must be more than that.
I think a lot of it is hospitality stuff. I think he's been given a lot of these things, and they do tend to be events where... And he's obviously making a lot of money through TalkSport, I'm guessing.
That's the thing. I was like, you don't make this much money. Talks about how he spends a lot of time in Mayfair. There's a bit where he goes into Claridge's and the maitre d' recognises him.
And
greets him like an old friend. He's got the life of a kind of sheikh. But he's just on TalkSport, which surely isn't like megabucks, is it?
I think you're right. It's so
not megabucks as such, but there'll be, you know, also
it's not enough to have a champagne budget. Let's be honest.
he's got the nut income coming in as well. Random nuts. It's not.
There's a bit where he's like, oh, the wine bar really happy to see us because we had like drunk them out of Sauvignon Blanc the night before and they had to go and get more from another place. Like, either that's a joke or like. Is he sort of drinking these places for diplomacy? Like, because he later on seems to imply like people then like barge down the door and all the waiters kind of defended Alan. Is he kind of just going to bars, drinking up a lot, so that when inevitably someone comes to beat up Alan Brazil, he can rely on all of the maitre d' and all the people staff. So he's sort of saving on like hospital bills. I guess.
Yeah, that is kind of smart. Yeah, everyone will flock to his defense if he ever does anything too bad. Like, cool. Yeah. Well, the wine bars of London will.
It will rise up. I was spending a lot of the book thinking that as well. And the idea that, and I think that also matches in with this idea that when Alan Brazil was fired from TalkSport for, I guess it would have been a week, that London was close to a standstill. Like the idea that the taxis refused to drive, like there were people just like hounding Mike Parry through the streets, begging Alan Brazil to return. But I have no memory of that. Is that something you guys remember? This controversy?
I feel like I'm a bit young, but it definitely wasn't, you know, 28 days later style. Like everything didn't relate to suddenly screech or stop. But I do think TalkSport, especially around them, is probably very well listened to. Yeah, you mean like there's a certain part of there's a big listening part population who do listen to TalkSport and to talk radio in general. So I do think he probably did make a big impact on that. And I can't remember who they replaced him with for a while, but
he's replaced by a guy, and you have to correct me if you can remember this, who owns a radio station in Jersey or Cornwall or somewhere.
Yeah,
and he talked with some
or Spain.
Yeah, that sounds all right. Yeah,
but the way he describes him as like he's a real mover and shaker. This guy, and you're like, doesn't sound like he is because
this guy's on Radio Marbella.
It doesn't sound like a big deal. And then there's a funny bit later on where he says to Mike Parry, saying, "Oh, we've got to get you back. We've got to get you back, Alan." And Alan goes, "Oh, how's my replacement doing?" And Mike Parry's like, "No. To be fair, he's really brilliant. He's amazing. but he is going to take about 2 years to bed in, and we don't have that time."
2 years.
Why do you think it needs 2 years? What's
he's either good. You don't need to worry about this. He's one of those 2 year bedders of I found the bit, and it's he had previously been our Spanish correspondent based in Marbella, where he had a share in a little coastal radio station that aired Jimmy Young type programs for the expat British community. You're right, that is not
that is not
a high level
high flying guy. Has anyone got an out of context Alan Brazil line for me, please?
So, I mean, as we've said, there are almost every page has got a good one on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, can I say two that are on the same subject?
Yeah, sure. You're our guest, why not?
These are two sentences from the same page. I hated terrorists and all that they stood for.
Yep.
And then my follow-up is, I've been trying for some time to figure out what I could do as an individual to hit back against the terrorists.
I literally texted both of those to James when I read them. So it is one of the funniest things anyone has ever written in these books. Oh, God.
I'd kind of forgotten them by that point. I was like, why did he mention that? I think Jack might give us a bit of an insight into why he mentions that later. But
it's so funny.
It's better in context because the context is mad.
It is
bananas.
I think Jack, you will give us the context. I've got to get into.
There's a lot to talk about with that one, but I've got one which I think might be the best thing. I think this might be my favorite out of context for a while. It's jockeys, sometimes just tiny little men, but among the hardest I've ever come across.
That is a great one.
Sometimes just tiny little men. Sometimes you're going to get get a jockey that's just a tiny little man. But a lot of the times,
small, always hard. A beautiful description. My one is just an example of some fun, harmless football banter. Again, this is at the World Cup 82, Scotland v Russia. I'm giving a lot of context for out of context. It was reputed to be a brutal regime, and our lads were taunting their players with things like, "It's back to the salt mines for you tonight, pal, after he'd welded you, you commie tosser." It's like a gentle banter. Gentle football banter.
It's also it's so wordy to say to someone on a football pitch as you're like running back in like 1,000 degree heat, just being like, you're back to the salt mine, you call me Jesus Christ.
Also, not their first language, so there's every chance they have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, he says afterwards that they just smiled at him because they have no idea what he's saying. Oh, fantastic.
I've got another quote, and this isn't an out of context, this is going to be in context, but I thought it was brilliant, where he goes to Newcastle, to St. James's Park, and it's been rebuilt, I think.
Yeah.
He remembered what it was like when he used to play there, because it was quite bad, and then it's been redone. And he's talking about how magnificent it is, and how it's amazing. And he says, "But now it was a magnificent structure towering into the sky, and worthy of a great team. Inside, the ballrooms were as good as anything you would find in a 4-star hotel."
I mean, I heard that as well. That's so funny.
Not 5-star.
A 4-star.
The ballrooms don't quite, you know, I've been, you know, not that good, but pretty good.
Let's not go crazy now. They're 4-star.
He's not a man known to exaggerate, Alan, as we know from this book. He's not a man known to exaggerate. It is time for a break, but we'll have more bubbly in Brazil when we return as Alan meets another Scottish Hellraiser and the moment you've all been waiting for, Alan on 9/11. Hello, James here, and we at Football Book Club want you. That's right, you, to join something special, something exclusive. We want you to join the Football Book Club Club. The Football Book Club Club is the home of even more Football Book Club action. And now, it's cheaper than ever to become a full member at just £3.50 a month. There's three tiers. By signing up to our Bookworm tier, you get an exclusive members-only episode of Football Book Club every fortnight, filling the gap between regular episodes with more book club fun and, frankly, a frighteningly deeper analysis of whatever book we're reading in the episode. Plus, you get access to all the bonus episodes recorded so far. There's over 20 of them on there. Well, 20. And most excitingly, you'll get your hands on a special edition Money Can't Buy bookmark you can put inside your personal copy of Darren Huckabee's Hucks. All that for just £3.50 a month. For context, that's a tenth of the cost of a cameo message from Ian Dowie. And a cameo is what, 30 seconds? For that price, you get 10 episodes. That's 3.5 hours of content. I dread to think what you have to pay to get 3.5 hours of content from Ian Dowie. You'd have to remortgage your house. But I digress. And if that's still not right for you, if you really love the show, you can join the Super Bookworm tier. And if you like the show but don't want to pay that much, you can support the show for just £1 a month on the Casual Reader tier. You won't get the bonus episodes, but yes, you will get that bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for more details. So if you enjoy the show, please consider joining up. It really does help us to keep making the show, because books don't grow on trees. But they are trees, kind of. And trees are expensive. But the Football Book Club isn't. So join today at patreon.com/footballbookclub or by following the link in the episode notes. See you back at the clubhouse.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare.
That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Alan Brazil's There's an Awful Lot of Bubbly in Brazil with Ben Partridge.
Hey!
Hey! Have you been suckered in by the Brazil charm, Ben? Moving on.
I wanted to like it. That's what I want to make clear. Yeah. I wanted to like it. I wanted it to be good.
I think it's not... there are times where it touches on being very good, I would say. There are times where it's like, oh, this, it's so bad, it's good, or like it's genuinely, and it never quite hits either one right, I would say. So I agree with that.
I would say still the second half, I quite enjoyed. I enjoyed it more.
That's true. But that's because you like people who've played for Spurs, James.
yeah, that is
when I got to that bit and he said he'd signed for Spurs, I was like, I can imagine James like smiling to himself at this stage and being like, ah, finally, a chapter I can enjoy.
Finally. I hate champagne, but I love Spurs.
Yeah,
he says he didn't have a great time at Spurs.
No, he didn't.
Is that
true? No, he didn't. He didn't have a good time at Spurs particularly. He did win the UEFA Cup.
You used to live in Ipswich, Jack.
Yes, I did. This is interesting. So I have a couple of times over, I mentioned to my wife, I was like, oh yeah, look, here's a nice thing he says about Ipswich. And my wife hates Ipswich. And she was like, nope, not listening to it. I refused to.
I was going to ask you the same thing, Jack, because I wondered what you thought about that as well, Jack, because he often describes Ipswich kind of with like, as though he's like, just, you know, come off a boat and see New York for the first time. It's like the bright lights of Ipswich occasionally. It's really very odd.
It is odd. It made me quite nostalgic for Ipswich in a weird way, because there are so many, they're just lovely bits that he described. He talked about the there's a hotel on Berners Street, when I was like, I remember Berners Street, it's right near the museum. It's very, I like Ipswich a lot. I have nothing against the people or the area of Ipswich. But yeah, he seemed to really go for it in a way that I was surprised by.
Yes. Yeah. Does he live there? He lives there, doesn't he?
He still lives there. There's a bit also where he's like, what's great about Ipswich is you can walk around there and not feel like you're going to have to start a fight. He's like, you don't have to, people look at you and you're not worried. As soon as they look at you, you're going to have to clench your fist and punch them, which I think says more about his growing up in Glasgow, but you know,
possibly. But yeah, talking of Alan getting into trouble, I think we want to talk about the ultimate troublemakers of the past 20 years, Jack. That's the smoothest segue I've ever done.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
So it's that he has an entire chapter on the state of America, which is, I think Alan sometimes. This might be controversial. I think Alan sometimes overestimates his importance on British culture, like his impact on the idea of British culture, because he starts talking about this chapter in America on America by saying, like, I first started to think about it while drinking champagne in the colony club, and like it. He presents this idea, like he's been building for ages, it's been in his brain, that is the ultimate way to show that we, the people of TalkSport, or specifically Porky in Brazil, are not afraid of terrorists and not afraid of Al-Qaeda. And it's like, it's like as soon as he says we first start, I first start to think of about it while drinking champagne in the Colony Club, we're all supposed to go, oh, he's going to talk about it. He's going to talk about the moment he he sucked it to Osama bin Laden.
Osama, yeah.
Basically, his big plan to show that to show Osama bin Laden that he's not afraid was to get TalkSport to pay for him to go to New York and do a show. And that is the level that of post 9/11, like this is, he says a couple of months after 9/11. Sometimes he talks about it as if it's like the next day, like the 12th September, he's getting on a plane being like, we're not afraid, Osama, here we go. But it must have been like February 2002.
Doesn't he, the news story is that some flights have been cancelled because there was a terror alert in one of the airports or something. So,
yes.
Yeah.
And he gets so annoyed by that, like so angry. that would ever happen.
Yeah.
It's the,
he's like, I think I'm getting on the next flight.
It's while he's on the Colony Club, he's watching like the news things coming in. But it's not, crucially, it's not of a terrorist attack. It is literally like, flight's been delayed again because everyone's a little bit jumpy.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm not jumpy. But the way he phrases it, it's sort of, the whole thing has an energy of like, it's D-Day, or like we're coming out of, you know, occupied France. Porky and Brazil are the ones like broadcasting the news from Nazi Germany. It's amazing. Yep, like yep. It's fascinating, the whole thing. The whole vibe has an amazing like self-importance to it.
Mm-hmm.
That is wonderful.
With a jeopardy that's not really there.
Well, exactly. Jeopardy,
yeah.
It's not there at all, and also is like, as he talks about it, it's basically like he sort of outlines his plan. As he starts off by saying it was a daring, bold, incredible plan, and you think the plan is going to be, well, we have to sneak into America somehow. We'll have to like disguise ourselves as cargo, or like it'll have to be like, you know, the film Argo, where we're pretending to shoot a film. And it's like, no, we got on first class. Got first class in BA. BA were lovely, by the way. We were the only ones there. They treated us really well. We drank lots of champagne, and then we landed in America. And it's like, this. No jeopardy here.
He didn't.
At one point,
they didn't even have that guy sitting next to them this time. Stiff guy.
But also, at one point, he's like, "I'll tell you what's great about this is that it's nice being in the air because I can call people on the phone, but they can't call me." Like, no daring like flight across the continent during war ever has a bit where you can do like 2 minutes of observational stand up. It's so weird.
It's true.
The whole section is bananas, and also I don't know what else to say about it. I love it. I'm sorry.
this is another example of one of the ones where you know, to Alan and to Porky, the public just believe just as much as he does that what they're doing is something incredible and really important to, like, you know, not just like TalkSport, but like the whole like geopolitical situation.
Well, I was terrified to fly until Brazil and Porky flew this flight. I was like, legitimately, it's a bit where he says, it's Brazil and Porky telling those cutthroat terrorists, you don't frighten us, Osama, we're flying British Airways, catch us if you can.
Yeah, I think that's about the time when they're being clapped and cheered through Heathrow. All the way through.
Porky dubbed it the flight of death.
Oh yeah.
But then he's told to, he's th- we have to restrain it. He said before the following morning show, when he had toned it down to the most dangerous airline flight in the world. They are literally going on a plane, on a commercial plane from America, from Britain to America.
Yeah,
bananas.
Yeah, very, really, really bizarre. And also, on the way back, Alan tries to basically act as much like a terrorist as he can to prove some kind of point. Like, he gets in an argument with like the security staff because like a buzzer goes off or something, and he's like,
he won't
get
take your hands off me.
Yeah, that's it. He won't take his shoes off.
And he's also like, he's like, I'm not going to take my shoes off. Where are you flying to, sir? London, where they have a little bit of personality. You're like, what are you doing?
People take their shoes off there all the time.
But also, yeah, you're right. It's not clear. It's not clear what Alan's problem is. Is it that the sort of faceless person who's asking him to take his shoes off is being a bit rude?
Yeah.
Or is it that he doesn't like the imposition on our liberty? And I don't think he understands or decides which he's affronted by.
He just is affronted generally.
He's just affronted at the idea of having to communicate with someone who doesn't find him like effervescent and charming, which in this book we're supposed to believe is like 1% of the population.
Until someone in the crowd, in like the queue behind, probably just desperate for them to get a fucking move on, goes like, he's an incredibly famous personality over in England. And then he says like, because in America everyone's totally fawning over celebrities, they go, oh yeah, no, fair enough. All right, get on the plane, you go, you scamp.
Also, the idea that Alan wouldn't have, he didn't want to have to play that card. He didn't want to have to play the cult of celebrity card, but he was forced to by this personalityless security guard. I mean, his whole like journey around America is very weird. There's a bit where they visit the Vietnam Memorial Wall, and it's so funny because he says like he's witnessing. It's very moving in a lot of places.
I know what you mean.
Witnessing like people like mourning their sons, mourning that like who had traveled there, and obviously it is 2002. It's a heightened emotional time in America. But there's a line which is, "Bloody wars," I thought, turning away from the monument with misty eyes. No notes. Bloody wars. Alan Brazil on wars.
It is incredible, actually, how many out of context lines there are in this one chapter alone.
Many.
Yeah, there's probably more than most books in this one chapter. And you chose a good one there. And I think overall, Alan does defeat Al Qaeda. I think
he did. We haven't heard. There have been no problems with that region ever since. So
everything's been fine.
But like, it's. I think it also because like later on, obviously, there's such a massive revelation about his life, and he has a really interesting story. You know, growing up and playing, wanting to play for Celtic, was unable to play for Celtic, moved to England. There's a lot of interesting things about Alan Brazil, but we spend about, I would say, 10 pages about the time when he's in an Irish pub. He says, it was clearly an Irish pub, so it was probably the nearest thing they had in this town to an English pub. Again, outstanding line. But like, where he's like, he has a crisis, which is, I really like this pub, but it doesn't have a piano. What are we going to do? And someone says, don't worry, there's a piano down the road over there. We'll just get everyone to move from this place to over there. And Alan's again like, it's another crisis. How's everyone going to get there? There is so much in this book that is not interesting at all. Why are we spending so long talking about how you got from one Irish bar to another one while you're pretending you're like freedom fighters? I don't understand it.
Totally bizarre. And everything we have mentioned has been from the first three chapters, I think, so far. I don't think we said any line that hasn't been in the first three chapters.
But that, I do think that Porky Parry's hands are all over the first half of the book.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't think he's had a hand in the second half of the book. So it's definitely a book of two halves.
For certainly. Sure.
What we are drawing deeply from is the deep well of Porky bullshit.
That is very true. I just wanted to bring up one thing, and I'm going to kind of veer into Tash territory here, because there's obviously a lot in the book we talked about, all the mad stuff, the bad stuff, and everything else that's in between. But the thing that left the biggest impression on me is that I'm 99.9% sure that Alan has imagined Rod Stewart. I think throughout the whole thing, I believe.
Sorry, James. Rod Stewart is real. No, I've heard of Rod Stewart.
I'm not doubting that. I believe Rod Stewart is real.
He's not made him up.
But I believe that Rod Stewart is
Rod Stewart.
Yeah. I believe Rod Stewart is Alan Brazil's imaginary friend in some way. Oh. Because I'll explain why I believe this. Basically, whenever Alan gets drunk enough, wherever he is, whether it's at the races, after a match, even like in another country, Rod Stewart inevitably appears. I think it happens like three times in the book throughout this thing. It happens definitely at least twice. And he loves Rod Stewart. He makes that very, very clear. He's a soccer nut. He's great fun. He loves booze. He loves women. He's like vaguely Scottish.
He's dedicated to Scotland.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Dedicated.
And I'll be honest, like, I was amazed it took 130 pages for Rod Stewart to turn up in the book. But when he does, he's kind of a constant presence in it. The first time he does, he's at an event where Dom Perignon is flowing, as always. Waitresses are there serving lobster all around a pool or something like this.
Yeah.
It all sounds very, very fake. So, you know, Alan's probably had a few drinks by this point. And then, what do you know? Who turns up? Rod Stewart. Now it gets even better. They don't even bother. They're meant to go to some races or something. They don't bother doing that. For some reason, Alan tells us that Rod's driver does a cracking Trevor Brooking impression. For some reason, I don't really get that bit. And then he's gone. He's just gone. He's not mentioned anymore. There's no goodbye or anything. He just fades off without a trace. That's the first occasion. Then about 30 or so pages later, he's mentioned again. He says he wishes that he could be like him. He says that, yeah, he thinks that it's a wonderful life to be like this, you know, sexy singer. And he also says that he could have been a singer, possibly, as well, but he chose football.
Loosely. Becoming David Gindler at this point.
You know, if you can have an imaginary friend, it's someone you idolize, a bit like, you know, that Michael Owen show that we talk about quite a lot. Zero to Hero, was that what it was called? Where the kid loves Michael Owen so much, the poster comes alive.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense. He also says how on these social events, where when he sees Rod, Rod's always inviting him over to his house to play football on his full-size pitch, which he has. But as Alan says, he can never make it, which I think is suspicious.
That is weird. Was confusing to me because doesn't he live quite close to him as
he
well?
He does. Like, they've known him for 20 years. Live very, very close. Surely they'd have found one day, but of course you can't. If you've imagined someone, you can't actually meet them. Anyway, and then later, we get the first time they met on page 271. Alan is naturally steaming drunk with the other Scotland players, celebrating them going out of the World Cup in Portobello News. They're dancing in a VIP area. All Scotland fans are joining them. And then just as Alan seems to kind of hit a sweet spot of drunkenness, someone grabs him and they're singing Flower of Scotland at this point, because again, he's vaguely Scottish. Who else? It's old Rod again. And together they dance the night away. Have the best night of their lives. And then he disappears again into thin air. The most telling of all the lines here, I think, into why I believe he's imagined him. He says, I looked at Rod's face and his wiry body and honestly wondered if he was made of the same blood and bones that we were. There are some people that are so famous that until you see them in the flesh, it's hard to believe they actually exist.
Open and shut.
He says he's got a pride of place at home. He has a photo of him, like Alan Hansen or something, and Rod Stewart. I believe that if you were to look at that picture, it would be Alan clutching midair, like thin air, like just clutching nothingness. But he sees it. No one else does.
Surely Rod. Rod, no!
Sort of Back to the Future style, like slowly disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the only
Rod's
theory.
Never lived here, man. Yeah. Okay. That theory falls down in the sense that, are you saying that every time Alan drinks, Rod Stewart appears?
Yes, largely. Yeah,
okay,
not every time.
Because then Rod Stewart would appear
not every
in
time.
His life.
Sorry, no, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That is very true. Yeah, Rod Stewart lives with me. It only when he gets to a certain point, I think. When he gets really Alan Brazil, that's when he turns up.
That bit where he sees him in the Spanish bar after they go out the World Cup, it is weird because he Rod Stewart just disappears and then someone's like, hey, do you want some speed? And he goes, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's so weird. Someone's like, he's like, oh, I'm a bit tired. And someone's like, oh, take these pills. And he just goes, I assume they're aspirin. Turns out later, they're not aspirin.
I totally forgot about that bit. Yeah,
it's weird that the Rod Stewart, if he is a hallucination, happens before that moment.
Yeah, you're right. I just remembered that he's very clear throughout he would never take drugs or do drugs, and then mentions two drugs that he's taken very, 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 very quickly. I was like, yeah, I forgot about that. But yeah, no, Rod Stewart, I think that's the only thing. He must be a ghost. Something mad like he just hangs out in similar social circles. Ghost Rod. And then the book kind of comes to an end after all this bravado in there. He talks a bit about his football. I felt quite sorry for him at the end, especially with the United stuff.
The picture you get like from his playing career, and this is where it is a bit interesting,
yes,
as you said, is obviously he wanted more than anything else to play for Celtic and then couldn't because the person who would have put him forward to be in the senior team was a child abuser. And so that kind of scuppers that. So that's just such an interesting and horrible thing that he couldn't play for Celtic because of that.
Definitely.
Because you sort of feel like he would have played for them had that not happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Ipswich and it's like, don't worry, I can play for Ipswich. We've got an exciting manager. Everything's going well. Mm-hmm. They win the UEFA Cup. You think, oh, brilliant, you know. And then by what, 27, he's kind mm-hmm. of out of the game because he's back.
Yeah, he goes playing non-league football, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real sense of like probably wasted talent or like not because of anything he did, but just mm-hmm. because he had those things not happened, he could have had mm-hmm. a really massive, long and fantastic career, but it just didn't happen.
There's a real sadness at the core of the book, which makes mm-hmm. the first 140 pages, reading it again, even sadder.
Yes.
Like, it's, yeah. And I think this is, I'm sort of like, I don't, a lot of the time with these books, the players who write them don't fully know what their story is. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't have an understanding of the whole narrative of their career. And it sort of feels like that with this as well. And I can't quite, I don't know what the right Alan Brazil book would be, but mm-hmm. it's certainly structured so weirdly that it's kind of hard to pull like a narrative out of it. But I do think there is one in there.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't connect any threads, does he? You sort of,
yeah.
Yes.
It's like a very avant-garde movie where you have to sort of find your own inferences and you know, what he's doing here is actually very advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to listen to the notes he's not playing. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I hope that, I don't know, it definitely made me go like, Alan Brazil is a much more interesting person than I thought he was going to be before reading this book.
I kind of agree with that, because there is more depth to it. And he is at times a good writer as well. Like he seems like a smart guy. He's got a lot of, makes a lot of good film references and things and like pop culture references and stuff throughout the book, which is, you know, a level which you don't always see in a lot of the other books that we read. And the broadcasting side is interesting. And obviously, like, he's got loads of followers. You don't stay on the radio for 20 years if you're all for your job. But there is a time and a place where, I listen to TalkSport occasionally. I'll turn it on my car.
Oh, no, it's beginning. Yeah,
I've got a shrine to Mike Paul
Harry. Sure.
in my spare room. Yeah.
He won the war on terror. Come on.
He won the war on terror. Show him some goddamn respect. But yeah, it is a mixture.
Him and George W. Bush and Rod Stewart. on the deck of the HMS Ark Royal. Yeah. We've done
it, chaps. But George Bush is just hugging nothing. When you look at that picture again.
Did this book change you, Ben?
Change me?
Hmm.
Hmm. No.
Okay, sure. Okay. No need to beat around the bush. Would you give it a reasonable score out of 10 for us? Or not reasonable score?
So it's less enjoyable than I thought it might be. But it's not, it's what I said at the beginning. It's kind of, it shouldn't be boring because he's telling you these wild stories where he's like commandeering a milk float at one point. And,
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's all this stuff that happens. Yeah. But it somehow is still boring. Yes. I don't know how he's pulled that off, but he has. So I'm going to give it a four out of 10.
Okay. Okay.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
It's not totally dull, but there's something about it that just doesn't, don't know what it is. It misfires for some reason.
See, if the book had been all those first four chapters, I would have been the same. I would have probably given it like negative score because it's so infuriating. But then I really actually did enjoy
hearing about his football career. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
when
it gets more interesting.
Yeah. I really liked that side of it. So I'd give it a five overall. It wasn't as insufferable as I thought it was going to be. And I've got no real, you know, huge problem with Alan Brazil in the first place. I know some people really do and would immediately be put off reading this book in the first place. But yeah, I've cards on the table. I have no qualms with Alan Brazil, but the book didn't do loads for me until the end. So yeah, I'd say five.
Yeah, I think I would say five as well, actually. I think thinking about Ben, I think the thing is, it's the lack of stakes when I think about it now, because you're right. All of the things that he's talking about in that first chapter could be quite exciting. But ultimately, it's hard to get that excited about the idea of Alan Brazil doing a talk show with Mike Porky Parry and think that it's important.
Yeah.
That sounds weird. I think it's an inflated sense of like, he thinks he's changing the world while doing this talk show. And if there'd just been a bit where he was like, because he does, he steals a milk float, he smashes a bunch of milk, and then he drives out of there at like 5 a.m. If there is then another sentence that was, all this to do a radio show, how mad is that?
Yeah, probably
would have just like, just you need something to puncture it. But it's the fact that he's like, oh god, It's a disaster. It's 5 minutes to six, and I'm supposed to be on the radio in 5 minutes. What are they going to do? Play old episodes? Probably. Like,
or Porky will just do it on his own, if you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. Like Porky will just say, oh, he's ill today, or something like yeah. that. There's just so many bits where there's just a lot, just remembering it as well, where, like, he keeps on saying, like, I fully intended to have an early night, but then a cruel twist of fate, like, turned it away from me, where I had to, like, I happened to bump into a friend, so I obviously had to drink for another 7 hours. Like, it's always someone else's fault, and it's always, like, the stakes are always massively high in his mind, and the reality is never really matching that. And I think that's what makes the first 5 pages frustrating. Or first chapter.
But that's what I think James is getting at, which is, if you just read the first half, I think the first half coloured the rest of it for me, so I couldn't really get to like the rest of it.
Yes.
If you didn't have to read the first half, which is just all those stories, it might be quite interesting, or it might be an okay biography.
All of his stories later on are like, some of them are about life and death moments. Like, he gets chased through Dundee by some angry footballers or football like hooligans, and he has to hide underneath a bus, and the bus is about to run him over. That's legitimately a life and death moment that is really exciting, that is brought about by like hooliganism, not by a man about to miss a radio show at 6 a.m.
Or some very obviously made up Latvians.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, oh, we're not here. Mike Porky Perry's never told her. Never told a lie. Oh, that's right. Maybe is that why it's called Porky? Maybe that's why it's called it. Who knows?
No, that's not the reason.
Nah, probably not. It's time for the quiz. This week, you are named after the two flavors of Alan's branded nuts. Yeah, they're called Brazil's nuts. Ben, you're dry roasted. And Jack, you're original salted. They're not particularly adventurous. as they say on the pack, premier quality peanuts. So shout out your name.
He's really pushing the boundaries of peanuts.
Yeah, he really is.
They're nuts, but they're dry roasted. Sorry, just to check, they're not actually Brazil nuts. They're just
They're normal nuts. They're normal nuts. Yeah,
fucking hell.
They're called Brazil's nuts. Yeah, so that's the joke.
James, don't say normal nuts as if a Brazil nut is an abnormal nut.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, but it's at least exciting.
No offense to the Brazil fans out there. Sorry. That was mean of me. So shout out your new name if you know the answer. Question number one. What has Alan Brazil not done since one terrifying day on Newmarket Heath?
Bready salted.
Yep.
Is it ride a horse?
Yeah, I'll give you that. It's sat on a horse, is what he says.
Okay.
Sat on a horse is what he says.
That's during the I don't know. Is this one a real story or not a real story? I couldn't quite tell. A horse goes a bit too fast for him and he freaks out. But there's a bit where he just, where it's driving along. It's riding along and he's like bouncing up and down. And he just says things like, please stop. Would you mind stopping?
Oh, horsey, please.
Yeah, that is exactly where it is, when the horse runs off. And he hasn't gone out since. But he will still watch horses every second of his life throughout the whole thing. So it hasn't been that traumatic for him. Question number two. Which band's lead singer did Alan Brazil go to school with?
Oh, Ready Salted.
He's just in there. He's just in there ahead of Dry Roasted. Oh, no, you're not. What's your name's Original Salted, Jack.
Oh, Original Salted. Oh, my God. Am I allowed to? Yep. Okay. Original
you can,
Salted.
You can go in. Yep.
Simple Minds.
Is correct. Yeah. I know.
Sorry.
I've got two other questions because Jack actually answered one in the show somehow. the next question is, how many James Beatties are there to an Alan Brazil? Yeah. They're more thinky questions, more cerebral this week.
Original Salted.
Yeah.
I think it's two.
He's correct. Okay. Again. Wow, this is extremely impressive.
Again, that was a really funny bit where he's like, that, you know, the amount of money they paid for me was £12 million in today's money.
Yes.
And considering that James Beattie was only £6 million, you can see, like,
that's exactly it. Yep. Yeah. And finally, one last question. How does Alan Brazil like to relax at home? There's probably many answers to this, but there's one specific one, which I hope you give me. It's quite convoluted. Many levels to it.
I don't know.
Many levels to it.
There's many stages to it, is probably the word.
Oh, he does a few things.
Stages?
Yeah.
Oh, does he... Oh, dry roasted.
Yeah.
This is more me fishing for a clue. but I think I'm getting mixed up with another book I'm reading at the moment. Does it involve having a bath?
It doesn't. Is the other book you're reading Both Barrels from Brazil?
It's Baths of My Life with Adam Brazil.
There were indeed a lot of baths in Brazil.
No, it involves...
Can you give us a clue? Can you give us a clue, James?
It's so hard to give a clue for this answer. But it involves a famous Western actor. Oh, just a famous actor in general, but he has been in some Westerns.
Oh, no. I do remember Clint Eastwood coming up.
Yes, that is... Yep, it's Clint Eastwood is the person.
I can't remember what the context of it is, but I do remember underlining it and thinking that is very weird, what I've just underlined.
The way I'll answer it for you, because I think it's going to very hard to get to this. The way Alan...
In order to get a point, James, can I try and...
Yeah.
Does it involve pouring and drinking a glass of champagne?
It doesn't, but I will give you a point because I'm almost certain that that he probably does do that alongside that. So, yeah, that's a point for dry roasted. No, what he likes to do is he has a Clint Eastwood DVD ready at home, which he puts on so he can play the rhythmic sound of horses' hooves on turf. and then he automatically, that's the only way he can relax, watching a Clint Eastwood DVD with the sound of galloping horses.
When YouTube came about, he must have been so happy. I can finally get rid of that Clint Eastwood DVD. I'll just load up some horses.
If anyone got that at home, may God have mercy on your souls. Right, okay. As a prize, well, Jack, you won that. And as your prize, you got this Ken Zong. You got your Ken Zong.
Oh, lovely.
So, Ben, Ken Zong is a guy who comes on our show and writes chants about forgotten footballers. But I actually, this week, a bit of a shock, someone actually messaged me on Twitter with their own Ken Zong instead. They said, I don't want to bite on Ken Zong's style, which is a strange turn of phrase, but his name was Daruchi Main, and he wrote this song about a current Luton Town fullback. Very detailed chant. Do you want me to sing it for you?
Go for it.
Yep, is the answer. Yep, okay. yeah. I'm going to do it whether you like it or not.
Instead, can we just hear the rhythmic sound of horses? Yeah, for
to the tune of rhythmic horses. it's to the tune of That's Amore.
Good.
When you need a right back who'll defend and attack, that's Kabore. When you need a clean sheet, then he's right up your street, that's Kabore. Anyway, that happened. I thought when it ends, then 5 days later, lo and behold, I get two more verses sent to me through Twitter. Luton will wing ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and we'll sing up the Hatters. And we'll stay tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, in a league that matters.
Oh, cool. Well,
he is only on loan, but he feels right at home. That's Kabore. He has just got one dream to wear the tangerine. That's Kabore.
Lovely.
There we go. Thank
that
you.
That was great.
Thank you so much. Daruchi Main. Daruchi Main sounds like a player who played for the United States national team in like 1998. Kind of, yeah. Incredible name.
Daruchi Main.
Yeah.
A sort of short failed period on loan to maybe Sunderland.
Yes, yeah,
like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. That is definitely his vibe. Oh, and he's listening in China as well. He says he might be our only fan in China. So everything about this is bizarre, but thank you so much. And please send more because that is a good one. That is all for this week's episode. We'll be back in a fortnight. If you can't wait that long, join the Book Club. Club on Patreon. Bookworm members of the club get a brand new exclusive bonus chapter episode every other week where we chat about even more of the book. It's $3.50 to join, so please do head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. In the meantime, do get in touch with us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Instagram at Football Book Club. Send us your puns, your Ken Zong requests. Just write a whole Ken Zong if you want. Do that. thanks everyone for joining today, and thank you so much, Ben. Thank you, Dan.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
It was brilliant. You were great. I'm glad you finally got to read Alan Brazil's book after all those months on your shelf. Are you back?
Yeah, where's
for the
it
rest
go
of
now?
The Brazil multiverse? Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to read Both Barrels.
I agree. I think we do need to do that.
I'm going to make a prediction about Both Barrels.
Uh-huh.
I think some of the stories are going to appear again.
I think you're
no.
Probably,
I think
surely
there'll be
surely not.
Or I think there'll be some stories that totally contradict everything that was in this book. I think, yeah. I think that
Yes, by the end of it,
I want them on a plane.
By the end, I want Jack to be put next to like a cork board with loads of red string,
Trying
to work out the truth of Alan Brazil. Did he meet Rod Stewart?
I'll categorically prove that Rod Stewart has never existed.
Yeah. Anything to plug, Ben?
Yes, well, I do two podcasts, one called The Beef and Dairy Network and one called Three Bean Salad, and they're both worth checking out. Yeah,
they're both amazing.
They absolutely are worth checking out. Thank you so much for joining. Jack, thank you as always. Any last words?
The rhythmic sound of horses' hooves.
There we go. I'll play that out, and I'll put Porky's cinnamon coughing over the top of it. So enjoy
the rhythmic sound of the cinnamon challenge.
Cinnamon challenge. Enjoy.
This is a tablespoonful of cinnamon. And I bet you I won't even balk, okay? I'm going to count you down. 3, 2, 1.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt and Benjamin Partridge. It was created and produced by James Bug. Thanks to Alan Brazil and, of course, Mike Porky Parry for writing the book. The music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used in a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, bye-bye.
A man was walking along a beach which represented his life. At his feet were two sets of footprints, his and God's. But looking back down the beach, the man could see that in the hardest parts of his life, there was only one set of footprints. So the man said to God, "Why is there only one set of footprints when times were hard? Where were you?" And God replied, "My precious child, I was in my car, listening to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast." The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is a multi-award-winning comedy podcast, and you can find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.